You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we talk iZombie. My name is Heather, and I'm joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
I do want to say that if you have not seen this episode of iZombie, stop listening now. Go watch the episode and then come back and listen to us again. But this is not one that you want to hear, I think, before you see the episode. And I'm going to say that by saying I really hate it when people say there's a twist. So I already told you don't listen to this episode of our podcast. So if yeah. I've spoiled you by saying there's a twist, tough. I already warned you. I do. I hate it when people say that there's a twist because then I go through the whole movie, TV show, whatever, trying to figure out what the twist is and seeing if it's obvious. And it's never a good payoff. I remember when Sixth Sense came out. My friends saw it like before me. They didn't give it away at all. They just, oh yeah, Haley Joel Osment was good, Bruce Willis was good, and Toni Collette was good, and the kid sees dead people. And so they didn't tell me at all. So when that ring dropped and you're like, oh my gosh, he's dead too, I was totally surprised. And it was such a great payoff. Then I have something like The Crying Game where somebody says, yeah, and there's a twist. I hated that movie because I knew what the twist was the entire time. So never tell people there's a twist.
Well, now you have. Now it's spoiled for everybody who, you know, attempted to listen to us. Well, sucks to be you, listeners.
I warned them ahead of time. Not a lot of warning, but tough. I mean, come on, you should know. If you listen to us at all, then you know that we're going to go into detail about all sorts of things. And if you're listening to us, that means you're subscribed to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice. So thank you very much for going over there and subscribing to Sci-Fi for Chicks, because we're cool. We're awesome.
Nice plug. You're getting really good at it.
And we're just so modest, too, about how wonderful and awesome we are. We're actually pretty modest. I mean, it's not like I go on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks and boast about us all the time.
You but should, because we're awesome. What if they didn't get the memo? Hello? We can't leave Twitter in the dark.
We're here to talk about iZombie Season 1, Episode 11, Astro Burger. And I can tell you that whole thing right there, I'm not too happy about, because that was the twist that was kind of obvious in the title, and I was really hoping wasn't going to happen because our Moonwalker didn't even get a chance to have screen time. Our poor Moonwalker didn't even get screen time before he became sushi. And I'm not liking this at all. And especially since right now my mom and I are planning a trip down to Houston and we want to go to NASA.
Yeah.
And I actually was looking on there because they have something. If you go to one of the space centers, they actually have this thing called Lunch with an Astronaut where you can go and have lunch and they talk and then afterwards you meet them. And I did it one time and I met Charlie Duke, who is a moonwalker. He was on Apollo 16. So here I'm looking up Lunch with an Astronaut, and then Astro Burger comes on, and the astronaut is lunch, and he's a moonwalker, and it just brings back all sorts of it's just very traumatizing for me right now to think of that, because I've known moonwalkers. It's just very sad.
Let me hug you.
Oh, thank you. I have my computer hug. We are going to go ahead and get into the episode. That's all I'll say about how sad I am about our astronaut. Let's get right into this episode. We start, of course, with our panel title cards, which these were pretty good. I mean, what did you think?
He or she is back on track because they're funny and well written. I like the references, but I miss my puns. I miss my puns.
There are some in there in orderly fashion, because that's when we're talking about the orderly. We had premium cuts, which was really great when we see meat. Cute. We have Game Over Man. That was just sad. Meals on Wheels. The Devil and Miss Moore. Probably my favorite one is One Flew Out of the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
I like that one. And then the one that you liked because it had the pun in it, and it's going to get us into our first section here. That's Pale in Comparison, which Blaine, Liv really is pale in comparison to Blaine with that spray tan. I think he's going a little darker.
Yeah, but I gotta tell you, I don't think she would be able to pull off fake tan like Blaine does. It's just...
No.
It's not her color. Just no. So I'd rather see her, you know, albino pale than, you know, Snooky.
Well, he does have that little bit of Euro trashness about him.
His name is Blaine the Bears. Of course he does.
Now, did you notice, though, that Liv mentioned that she doesn't know his last name, so she hasn't had a chance to revel in the awfulness that is his name? Yeah.
Heather, when I heard this, the first thing I thought, and I was this close of actually saying it to the screen, was, boy, are you lucky.
No kidding. When she finds it out, she's going to go, really? Really? But then again, she was going to marry Major Lilywhite, so. And we have Blaine with our Lieutenant Suzuki. So Blaine in the motorcycle right there having their little bit. And Blaine being a little bit more threatening here. I like this when we have an episode where Blaine has that really threatening, menacing, and then he becomes all nice and happy, because we had him being very menacing with Suzuki. Remember, I like my info like you like your brains, fresh. And that just seemed really, you know, menacing and threatening. And the way Blaine stabbed the doofus henchman, just to make a point, you know, being so menacing. But then you have Blaine, after he finds out from Suzuki that Liv was the one that was cradling He Who Will Not Be Named, because it will make Alex very sad.
Good name.
He decides to go to Liv and Ravi, and he's being all nice. I don't trust him, and I know they don't trust him, but it's very disquieting when you see Blaine being that way. You know, it's, I'm just waiting for the other brain to drop or something. It's just very disquieting.
Well done. I like all the different shades of Blaine. Maybe he has 50 of them. I don't know. I don't want to get into this. But I like that he takes on a different persona for every situation he's in. That said, I don't know if it's just me, but when I watched his scene with Suzuki, I was wondering, seriously, Lieutenant? You have a zombie in the morgue. Well, all the bodies are. And you're letting yourself be blackmailed by a guy named Blaine? Come on, man! I thought you were cool!
You did?
Well, I liked him. He was badass. But apparently, he allows himself to be blackmailed by a guy named Blaine. So, you know, he's losing points.
He hasn't figured out a way to get his brains. Remember, he wants to eat the chicken. He just doesn't want to kill the chicken.
As I said, there's a zombie in the morgue. Come on! Wake up, man.
A zombie in the morgue who's meeting with another zombie in the morgue. And our favorite doctor, non-zombie, Ravi. What did you think about that whole thing? Like, everybody know. I think everybody knows that everybody else knows.
But they're not saying it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it because it's a special kind of awkward.
Exactly.
When you know,
I like
they
that.
Know.
A special kind of awkward. Okay.
But you play the game anyway. It's like I was cringing when I was watching those scenes, but I enjoyed them immensely.
I knew that Liv wasn't going to try and poison him because, and that was very good rationale for her later on when she's talking with Ravi that, you know, she doesn't know what it's going to do. And then Ravi talking about, then I'd have two dead zombies. Yeah, yeah. I can just see Ravi having to explain that off. But that moment when Blaine's like, after you, and then see what happens next. And then they did that same thing they did a few episodes ago when they started the episode with Major laying on that slab. And you thought he was dead. They start with Blaine just laying there. And I'm like, okay, but she drank too when she's standing there. I guess Max Rager doesn't really do anything to zombies if their blood pressure only went up a few points. That's interesting.
Yeah. This is going somewhere. I'm sure of it.
I like that he even, though that Blaine was even saying, yeah, well, you'll keep looking for the cure. Like, really, Blaine? Really? Do you want them to find a cure? Or is this a setup for something else?
Well, come on. It does make sense that Blaine would be all, go look for the cure. Because think about it. If there's a cure and Blaine gets his hands on it, he could be turning people into zombies and then he either gets a revenue stream from them buying brains or gets a revenue stream from them trying to get the cure, which he can price accordingly. It's a perfect, basically, business model. Because he earns money either way. All he has to do is make more zombies.
And then kill famous people like Alan York, the astronaut. It's like moon dust. Oh, Blaine.
Yeah.
But that, what did he say? Like 200,000? 250,000?
Yeah. 200,000 a pop.
Wow. That's, I wonder how much brain you actually get for $200,000.
Well, at least a bite, because you want the memories.
So we had this interaction with Blaine and Liv and Ravi, who is still looking for the cure. He's even saying that's what they do with all of their free time. Now they don't have a lot of free time.
Because people keep getting murdered.
Because people keep getting murdered. Hint, hint, Blaine. Hint, hint, stop. Ravi tap dancing right around there. We see kind of jumping at the end here, which I know this is where Alex actually wanted to originally end it. I am interested in the fact that he's talking about this rat. And we see that Zombie Rat is not a zombie anymore. We're two episodes before the season finale. And it looks like Zombie Rat has been cured.
Yeah.
Is there a cure on the horizon? Is this going to be something that he's going to make and Liv could have it, but then she decides to stay a zombie so that she can battle Blaine? What does this mean, actually, having the zombie cure?
I have a theory.
Oh, goody.
Yes, and for everybody who makes this reference from Buffy, no, it's not bunnies. But I actually think, because you said previously that they designed this as a self-contained season in fears that they might not get renewed. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure the end game for the one season long series was to find a cure at the end of it. But now that they have season two, I'm pretty sure that yes, Ravi will be able to manufacture one cure, one unit of it. And somebody we know who's human will get turned into a zombie and then Liv will give up that cure to save that person. Currently, frontrunners are Major and Clive. That's my theory.
Interesting.
At least that's how I would play it if I was writing it. So basically, yeah.
He did emphasize a couple times that, you know, he was running out of the tainted Max Rager. And samples and things. So yeah, I can see that because Ravi did drop a few of those hints that maybe he only has so much. And he did say he has a template for the cure. So I could see that. You know, you only have enough and you save, you know, one person. I'm actually going to say in that example, I'm going to lean more towards Clive.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm going to lean more towards that. If that is the case, I'm going to lean, I think, a little bit more towards it being Clive that she saves. Not that that both of them are being turned and she has to choose between Clive and Major. But I think, I like your idea. I think it would get, no. We're not going to have.
No, we're not doing it. I know.
We're not doing that. We didn't choose between Lowell and Major. We're not going to choose between Major and Clyde.
No, Major is a human with major problem with zombies is more fun as a human. So yeah, I think you're right. If they go this direction, they will make Clive a temporary zombie.
And I think we have a clue, maybe because next week's episode is called Dead Rat, Live Rat, Brown Rat, White Rat. We have a dead rat and a live rat. Obviously, this is not a zombie children's story. Would a zombie child age?
No. Sorry.
I like where that idea is going, and I think that could be definitely there.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that they did this season, that if they wanted to make sure that it wasn't total cliffhanger, and if they didn't get picked up, that fans would be left upset, mm-hmm. that they had some kind of resolution, but still had enough
to hang
on for a season two. So I like where you're going with that one. That was a good one.
Thank you.
I approve of that one. One other thing real quick I want to say that I approve of, since we're talking about Ravi.
Mm-hmm.
I like Ravi and Peyton. I really do. That was just so cute. I think they actually make a really fun couple that she doesn't realize is a couple. She kind of does, but I think she's keeping it in the friend zone, but open to it moving out of the friend zone. I think they were so cute together.
Aww, they were. They were. I especially liked her socks, by the way.
That's so cute.
I identified with Peyton in that moment so much because I wear huge socks every time, but I can be in a tank top and short shorts, but I have to have my socks on to be completely warm. So she's my spirit animal, basically. She is
Peyton is your spirit animal.
Yeah. She's awesome.
When you're saying, what, do you have a problem with my short shorts? No, no, not a problem at all. Nope.
Which was a nice save, by the way, especially from a guy who wants to score.
I have to say that we thought Ravi... that Raul is an attractive guy. We thought this from the beginning.
Oh yeah.
He does have that. He's tall, dark, handsome. He's got the accent, which does not hurt one lick.
Nope.
His character is a doctor. I will say he started out attractive and he just keeps being more attractive. I'm like, you go Peyton. This is a good guy. This is the unassuming kind of a guy that once you realize, you know, you take your blinders off, you're like, oh, hello, hello. So I am
honestly looking forward to season two, because I don't think it's going to happen in season one, but I'm looking forward to season two when we see Ravi shirtless.
That's a challenge for you, Raul.
And it's going to be a huge sacrifice on my part. But I will watch season two and I will endure iZombie just to see it. It's not that I'm objectifying him, mind you, but I'm objectifying him, like, a lot.
I'm kind of objectifying him, that's fine. Perfectly fine with that. This whole episode starts out with a crime, and poor Major keeps losing people that he starts getting close to.
Yeah.
Because we have Scotty, commits suicide. Supposedly. Ravi is the one that tells everybody, not so much. Because, yeah, and they did the way that should have been bleeding out all over the place with how he cut his wrists. It shouldn't be that rosé color. I love Ravi.
I was actually surprised that they showed the way he cut his wrists, because I was pretty sure that standards and practices are a little tougher than that.
No.
Since suicide is kind of a touchy subject and usually gets a warning label or something.
Well, especially... Really?
Well, it's supposed to. Come on. It's a triggering event, so I'm surprised that there wasn't any label that would warn people for, you know, images of suicide, apparent or otherwise.
Well, maybe because it was not a suicide and he didn't cut his wrists. We find out later that it was the doctor she's played a German assistant on Devious Maze. She was just on Dig playing this religious fanatic person. Every time I see her, I know that it's her. She just, there's something about the roles that she takes on. It's her. It was her. It's like Clive in that first episode where it's like, if the husband's dead, it's the wife. If the wife's dead, it's the husband. If you see her, it's her. She did it.
It's just, like David Anders. You see him and you know he's up to no good. Yeah, she did it.
Exactly.
She did it.
The minute I saw that. And then you see that this is somebody that Major is friends with and has communication with. And I'm like, and the guy that just told Major that there are zombies, you're not crazy, that makes him feel better. And yet another death. I mean, how Major keeps getting involved in these murders and deaths and things that this guy just does not have much luck when it comes to the people he associates with.
Yeah. Also, but I have to give props to the writers, because for a while there, since I didn't know the actress, for a while there, I was convinced that Blaine did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the guy knew about zombies, and as far as I know, for the past 10 episodes, any zombie-related kill was on Blaine's hands. So my mind immediately went, yeah, David Anders did it. And nobody's going to be surprised. And then I was surprised.
I mean, I can see where you're going with that. I don't think Blaine would, do something to have him go. How did Ravi say it? How he went gently into that warm bath in the sky. I don't think that's Blaine's style. He would have just...
Yeah. Ooh, by the way, speaking of Blaine, did you see his name on the visitor's log? Did you see it?
Yes. D-E-A-U-X. John Doe.
I cracked up so much because in that moment it was so hilarious. And then it still is when I think about it. I'm just, come on.
So are we getting from this too then that, I was kind of blindsided by some other things, that Scotty was also a drug dealer, so maybe he and Blaine were fellow drug dealer friends? Mm-hmm. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And why he was coming to visit him and, yeah, playing chess or whatever with him, or, you know, occasionally, yeah, or whatever he was doing. So they were just kind of like drug bros.
I think so. I guess. I'm pretty sure Blaine would probably want to know what Scotty knew. Because he went bonkers after the Lake View party, right?
So I'm going to guess he was probably a little bit off to begin with, because with the brain that he had and the drugs he was on and everything, I think there had to be something there. This might have been what pushed him over the edge.
Yeah, but apparently he had the evidence. I'm just saying.
That was interesting, too. I thought it was interesting that Ravi and Liv basically spill those beans to Blaine when they're all down there in the morgue. That, you know, Blaine says that he does know Scotty, and they mention something about the phone, and that there's video on that. I mean, I think they were doing it to obviously see if there's a reaction from Blaine. Mm. Blaine did seem genuinely, which we see later on when he's breaking in, genuinely like, huh, there's video. Yeah, that's not good. Am I on that video? You know, are they showing, is this going to be video of me doing full on zombie rager mode kind of thing?
Well, in this case, nobody involved wants the zombie secret to get out.
Right.
So even if it wasn't by accident that they, you know, let it slip, I'm pretty sure they would figure out that if Blaine didn't take the phone, then if he found it, he would destroy it. Because nobody wants the zombie secret.
Definitely. And, I mean, this is one that I think the crime was really interesting after we got past the actual crime. Because what Scotty represented with having that evidence, with, you know, like telling Major, you're not crazy, and he knows it because of this evidence that's on his phone, and what Liv and Blaine are now doing to try and protect themselves and also protect the outside world. I mean, Blaine's doing it very selfishly. He doesn't want it to get out. Liv doesn't want to get out very, you know, because she wants to protect people. But that became interesting. The whole crime thing that we find out later. I don't even understand why the doctor was with Scotty and got pregnant by him other than her husband was older.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't care, but Scotty got dead.
Snowball
effect. He put everything in motion. So
the murder was important. Why the murder happened and the actual crime wasn't.
Exactly.
And I think that's in a way different, even in in Live and Let Clive, when we didn't care about the crime at all. That was just because it got us in a situation. Scotty was actually very important to this. And so that was the interesting part, because it meant it mattered to Major, it matters to Liv, it matters to Blaine.
But it also allowed us to see Clive interact with Major after telling Major he's cuckoo.
Yeah.
So that was, and we talked about all kinds of awkward when we talked about Blaine, Ravi, and Liv. Now, Major and Clive, that was awkward.
Just a little. I mean, it really is. You saw that awkwardness throughout the whole thing, even on the double date. They were going to watch Vertigo, which is about a guy who's kind of losing his mind. Yeah, maybe we won't watch that one. You know, and then we go on to this other one. No, maybe we won't watch the zombie. You know, it's just awkwardness all around, everywhere. And it was kind of interesting to see that and have everybody kind of be off balance in that, you know?
Yeah. I liked it.
And we have Liv. She does actually mention that Clive is her partner. But she doesn't partner with him in this episode. She eats Scotty's brain, which gives her all these connections, and she sees all these visions and things, including the little cheesy Puffs devil guy. It was fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
I loved watching her yell at him in the vending machine. Took my money. Clive watching her yell at the cheesy Puffs.
That was hilarious.
Devil. It was a fun little thing. I have to say, I was disappointed throughout the majority of the episode. We'll talk about when I wasn't disappointed anymore. About the fact that really seemed to be the only thing that she was getting from the brain. I mean, we've had so many great episodes where she was so affected by the brain. We have this whole thing where she's basically not. And yet she gets another partner with this Johnny Frost guy who's just stereotype of a weatherman, left or right, which I've seen a lot of weathermen lately because we've had a lot of really bad weather down here. So that's like 24/7 now on all our stations here. Just made me laugh so much. And him talking about how him and Scotty were such good friends and they sit there and have debates about Beatles, Stones, Kirk, Picard, Ren, Stimpy. It was such an odd pairing, but I kind of liked it because it was so odd. What did you think of Liv and Johnny Frost before we get to the end of it?
Through the whole thing, before the big reveal, so to speak, I was kind of wondering why on earth is she there with the weatherman instead of Clive?
Of Clive, exactly. It was
so
different.
That was my huge problem with it, because I got used to the Liv Clive dynamic duo, and they got used to each other over the course of 11 episodes. So to suddenly see her with somebody else, somebody who's so out there and such a larger than life personality. Then it threw me at first, but later on, I decided, yeah, this is awesome. Give me more of this. And of course, it turned out to be a delusion, because why not? That was a nice twist.
There's like all these little clues, because like I said, I was actually kind of disappointed throughout the episode that she didn't seem to be on a brain. I mean, here we're talking about a drug dealer. And he's talking about how Scotty was his pot dealer, and then he was like his uncle. There were all these little clues, though, like when they're in the apartment, and he said, my headshot is missing. My headshot was up here. If you look back on the episode, and this is why we're getting into the area where we can't really avoid it anymore, and this is why I said if you haven't watched the episode, watch the episode, then come back and listen to us. That was a clue that he didn't really have a connection to Johnny Frost, the weatherman guy. There's all these little clues that Scotty's brain is dropping her that, hello, you're in this total messed up delusion, illusion kind of thing here. That looking back on, when we find out that he was totally a delusion, that he wasn't real, that he was still off on his TV show thing, that was awesome, because it's like you look back on the entire episode and
it makes sense.
That, yeah, there's all these hints throughout the way, and everything you thought in this episode, it was wrong. I mean, here, his brain is leading her to his apartment and leads her to the phone and leads her, you know, all these different areas, where she finally gets the phone and she sees that video footage that he had.
Mm.
That has a nice little close up of Liv.
Of Liv, yeah.
Eating the brain.
Ugh.
Which I think that was important for us to see and for her to see, because she's never seen herself in that way. It kind of reminded me, her watching that video of her eating that first brain reminded me of he whose name I don't want to say because you'll get sad, upset, talking about when he took the brain of that English teacher. And how it really hit him in the gut. I think this was the first time she's really seen it and allowed it to hit her in the gut that way.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this was the first time where she actually realized it's not a theory. I am a monster. Because I'm pretty sure that that first feed was a blurry memory, and I don't think she can recall much of it, because she just woke up from being dead and needed to feed. So that was that. And afterwards, she got hooked on Morgue Brain.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no desperation in, you know, the way she was, at least none that we saw. And it's not like she can see herself when she rages out, right?
Right.
So this was a wake-up call. Hey, I'm a monster.
Yeah. And actually seeing, like, not how she does it, where she takes the brain out and then sautés it or whatever, you know, however she prepares it to eat. This is, that body was laying there, and she's over the body and eating the brains. Right, yeah, I think that was a good wake-up call for her to remember, which plays into a lot of other stuff that happens there. I love how, because it was starting to annoy me that Johnny Frost kept saying that it was going to be 63, which is 17 degrees Celsius. I'm like, okay, we get it. And no, it's not. It does not look like it's going to be 63 and 17 Celsius out there with how they had it. As she's going, do you want to take some of these codes? Do you want to try and unlock the phone? And she finally gets it. Hey, wait, this is the code. Maybe let's try the code. And that's how she does finally see the video and sees herself. It is just all these little clues in there. And I think it's interesting that she's so aware of all these past brains that she's eaten when she's on it. Even if she gets caught up in the moment, she gets really artistic, or she gets really passionate, or she's drunk, or she's very analytical. It doesn't take her long to realize that it's the brain that she's on that's causing this.
Mm-hmm.
This was the whole episode. It took her till the very end to realize that the brain wasn't just her seeing these little devil bag cheesy puff guys. That she's been on the brain the whole time. And I think that's interesting too. The same moment, same basic time she realizes what a monster she is, that's when she sees how much the brain really took over.
Mm.
And influenced everything she did.
It was really well done, and not in a way that it was new for us, but it was actually written well as far as character development goes, and as far as exploration of what the brain does to you. Because she couldn't know that it was the brain all along, because the delusions aren't always so easy to find out. Like, people who have mental disorders, they believe what's happening in their mind is actually happening for real. So the delusions have to be believable to somebody who doesn't have a skewed brain chemistry, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we were, the viewers, and Liv as well, you know. We bought into the delusion because it seemed believable. And only afterwards, we were like, oh yeah, the signs were there all along.
I think it's important too because, yeah, we've all gotten used to this how it plays out when she's on the brain. She eats some, suddenly there's something that seems different from her character. And that's the brain. You know, whatever brain she's on, we see it too. And we see the patterns and we know when she's on brain and when she's live. And this was a time, I'm sure there are people out there who did figure it out, but I was just going along with the flow and taking notes because, you know, I take notes. So I'm just taking it in as it comes. And I didn't get it until that end. And what I loved even more was when I got it because of Johnny Frost, the weatherman guy, I still didn't totally get it. I wasn't working to try and put all the puzzle pieces in there to go, it wasn't just Johnny Frost that she was having the delusions of as well. She didn't know when she was on brain. We didn't know when she was on brain. Do we have anything we want to say more about the crime and the general delusions, or is it time to move into major?
Well, the only thing that I wanted to say, which we can move on to major after that, is that the way I took it at the end of the episode, like after it ended and I knew that we would be talking about that, I decided that the best way to sum it up is basically Scotty's illness adapted to Liv's brain. And she wasn't having Scotty's delusions. She was having her own. Which is why she bought into them so easily. Because if she was seeing Scotty's insanity, like Scotty's visions and, you know, devils, it started with Scotty's delusion, which is the devil. But then it adapted and Scotty's insanity became Liv's insanity. And that's when things started to be believable. And we started to buy into it.
And it eased in very easily because of the fact that we start with this crime with Scotty, who is a quote unquote friend of Major's. So we have Major organically coming into this whole reason why Liv's there and Clive's there and why she has to eat the brain and why she's even more open to eating the brain. I still sometimes can't believe that we're talking so casually about eating a human's brain. Why she wanted to do it even more because she wanted to help Major. This is yet another thing with Major. And so she's got this empathetic, this door opens there. Plus she's still hurting because of Lowell. Yeah. We know she is. It's still there.
Of course she is.
And so you have this whole double, just things piling on top of her as well that really makes her so much more susceptible to the brain. And then you have something as easy as when Major does get out. I, you know, love how he was saying how he crashed out. He's like, no. I checked myself out. It's okay. Remember, I went in there voluntarily so I can come out. Him throwing these little jokes around so it keeps her at ease. It keeps everybody at ease. You know, talking about the Jimmy Stewart haters there. I love how he plays these things where he just has that ease about him, even when you can tell his character's hurting inside. Yeah. And I think that that's what played into Liv and how she was able to create this next delusion because things were so at ease. They did still care about each other. They're friends. They're working for each other. They were able to have that double date with all of them being, I'd say happy. I mean, Ravi was happy because Peyton is there and she's in short shorts. So Ravi was definitely very happy, but you know, they're having a good night. And then he leaves, you know, okay, well, night then, and he leaves. When you go back to, when you see the end of the episode, you realize that he really did leave.
Yeah. And
the delusion was when he came back, and that's what Liv needed. Liv needed him to come back, and she needed, just like she kind of wanted Lowell, not kind of, but she wanted Lowell to come back. This is somebody that she's lost and has come back to her. And
Yeah. You
start seeing all these wonderful things opening up, and him staying on the couch, and the next morning, thank you, Liv, for this part of the delusion. I thank you very much, because we got to see Robert Buckley shirtless again.
Yeah, the sacrifices that we make. Oh my God, sacrifices.
Whew. Thank you, Robert Buckley. Thank you for that. I'll have that delusion any time. I think the writers actually really did it really well, because I totally bought into that he did come back, that he was there sleeping on the couch and all that. And then her saying, well, you can sleep in my bed when I go to work, you know, or he has to go find a new job. So she's thinking, these are all things she's thinking that he needs to do to start moving on with his life. In the meantime, we see him breaking into Scotty's apartment because everybody's looking for the computer or the phone or the whatever. Yeah. I totally did not get that those were two different majors.
Mm.
I just thought Major was being nice. And just telling Liv what she needed to hear, and then going and doing what he needed to do.
Yeah, and the way it was cut in the episode and edited, that's exactly what the powers that be wanted us to think. And I salute them, because that was brilliant job, the way they did it. Because at no point in time you had any inclination that what was going on is not real. Not with Major. At least not until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
But I think afterwards, when Liv revealed her secret, I think that was supposed to be a hint. Like, really, Liv? You thought it would be this easy? But it was my wish fulfillment as well, so I bought it because I wanted them to be happy and not at odds.
I'm going to really give it to Robert Buckley, because the way he's been playing this character all along with these easy little jokes and quips and how he's been acting it, I totally bought it. Mm-hmm. And I totally bought that he would go and try and do all this vigilante stuff on his own because he feels like he's alone, but still try to connect with Ravi and Peyton and Liv, and especially Liv. I totally bought that. I was screaming at him, of course, you know, when Blaine and Julian are coming up the stairs, and I'm like, oh gosh, not again. Even though I don't know how he missed Blaine coming to visit Scotty. It must have been a nice, well-timed thing there. But when he goes down and he starts looking in the car, I'm like, oh, because, you know, that didn't go so well the last time he was trying to ransack the car. And then he gets in the trunk to follow them to meet Cute.
Come on.
He is becoming the detective that Clive is not?
I have to tell you, this episode contributed to possibly me developing anxiety disorder. Because I was so stressed through all the scenes that didn't involve Liv and Major. I was so afraid for him the whole time. Like, my blood pressure went through the roof. I'm confident that that's what happened, because, oh my God, seriously, Major, why can't you just stay in one place? I will tie you down to a chair and wait until your PI adventures stop being interesting to you, because what are you doing to me? I haven't been so stressed about a show in a long time.
Maybe you need to not have Scotty's brain. Maybe that's what kind of tea you're having right now.
Yeah. You need
Scotty tea?
Yeah. Well, I'm drinking, I'm not sharing.
We see in the morning, but when Liv comes back, Major's in Liv's bed. Aww. And they cuddle. Aww. By the way, this is Sci-Fi for Chicks. And we see later on when they're making dinner, and I'm, of course, worried because, Liv, don't cut yourself. You know, after we saw last week with Sebastian Zombie sucking her blood and that turns him. I'm like, don't cut yourself. Don't scratch him accident. I'm all worried. I really was worried this entire time when they're cuddling and they're having dinner and such. It's like, don't turn Major accidentally into a zombie. That would just be awful. Yeah. That's like Josh and Nora on Being Human. Don't accidentally do it. You'll beat yourself up for it. You had alluded to her actually telling him, and it was heartbreaking when he starts doing this. Tell me why we can't be together. Did you cheat on me? Do I bore you? I'm like, how do you not tell him? How do you not tell him when he's saying that? Because you know there's guilt weighing on her head. We now know that this is a delusion. After what Ravi's saying, we're doing this to him. We're keeping the secret from him. We're doing this to him. And that's on her brain, that she's the cause of Major's downfall. And I totally thought that they were going against what I thought they were going to do, and that she did actually tell him. I bought into it 100% that she told him, and that he loved her so much that, you know, how does it feel to finally know better? And I'm like, really? Wow, you are, I even put that, okay, he's too perfect. Sigh. That is in my notes right after he says that. He is too perfect of a guy.
Major. My problem with that scene was, even though it was my own wish fulfillment as well, but I was like, really? That's your reaction? How are you even real? I know that in one of his romantic comedies, with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, she jokes that Gosling's abs are photoshopped. I was like, are you photoshopped? How are you real? Where do I get one of those? But yeah, apparently it was wish fulfillment and not at all real.
In a way, I think it's what she needed and wanted and hoped for, because she was accepted very easily with Lowell, obviously, because he was a zombie too. But she wants and needs that acceptance, and we've seen how close these two are. When you find out that this was a delusion this whole time, it's like, this is what Liv so needs. But it's not what, wait till she, you know, at the end, when Major actually shows her what he needs. Like, I don't want to say he's moved on from Liv, because I don't think he has. But I think he has so backburnered it into, he's not going to be the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens again, it happens, and it'll happen because Liv initiates it to happen again. So I don't think he's even thinking that anymore. When he comes in with all those, because we did see when Blaine stabbed the doofus henchman guy, because all the brains were stolen. That scene seemed so disconnected. I'm like, what? This doesn't make, did I miss a scene? I'm like, do I need to rewind? Did I miss something about all of these deliveries? And I'm guessing those are all the astronaut brain there that he has, so like the $200,000 pop one. When Major comes in with all those coolers, and you're, that's the ring drop. That's the sixth sense ring drop moment where you're like, he was a delusion this whole time too, and it's still moving forward. He's got all these brains, and don't worry, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna kill them all. It was such an awesome moment. It was such an awesome moment because every fear Liv has is still there. After she's just had this moment of comfort, and Major is this close to understanding, and he's now put himself in a world of hurt because he's taken Blaine's.
Brains, yeah.
Cash cow brain, yeah. Oh, yeah. Which, considering the final episode is called Blaine's World,
Come on. I don't think Liv is going to tell Major now. Even if that scene in the kitchen, even if she realized that Major was a delusion, I'm pretty sure that scene puts her closer to actually telling him. But now, nope. Nobody's getting Major in on the secret that Liv knows and Ravi knows. And God forbid Clive learns. Then Major will be, oh my God, it's a conspiracy. And everybody's out to get me. And it's not paranoia, because they really are out to get me.
Yeah, because it's, they took me off of my path of where I thought it was going to go. Where I said, I think they're going to let Clive in on it. Which might be because of your theory about maybe he becomes a temporary zombie kind of thing. That they're going to let Clive in on it, but they're not going to let Major in on it. and Major's going to be on the outs, and he's going to be on the outside, and he's going to have the animosity towards them. If she's not scared, she should be, because he's coming in saying, I'm going to kill them all. And she's like, oh, excuse me, I'm one of them. It puts him so on the opposite side. And it, right back where I thought he'd be, but I didn't know we were getting there that way.
I'm pretty sure that if they don't fix this by the end of the season, Major is going to be a huge antagonist in season two. And I think it'll do him good, you know? He'll be good at it. We'll be good at it. I'm looking forward to that if it happens.
Do we want it to go that way? Do we want him to be an antagonist, an anti-hero in season two?
Part of me wants that because it's going to be great material for Robert Buckley. I'm really confident that the writers will give him incredible stuff to work with. But at the same time, the other part of me wants them to have a happy ending. So, you know, there's the fluffy side and the black heart side that battle every day. I'm torn. What about
Well, you have more knowledge history with CW. I'm wondering if they, how they would do this, because to me, I would I love the idea now of having it be like Lost. Oh, I haven't gotten that in a while. Where it's a beginning, middle, and an end, where you actually have an end to the story. It doesn't just fade off or whatever. And if they're thinking of the series like that, where they do have an end game they're working to, regardless of how many seasons, you know, we'll keep renewing you for 20 seasons. Just keep giving us stuff. If they say, well, we actually have an end and we want to get there, I'm hoping that, yeah, that that would be the end of the happy, fluffy ending Major and Liv back together. I mean, even Bradley James talked about how it's, he thinks that that's what it was. This was in an interview before Lowell's demise aired. He was saying, I think all the fans know, even the Lowell Liv shippers know that it's supposed to be Liv and Major. And this is coming from Bradley James' own mouth there, that it, that's, I think that's how we've set it up, is it's supposed to be them in the end.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are endgame.
But I think you have to split them apart even further. I don't know that it could continue on the way it has been this season, where they're still friendly and there's that tension, romantic sexual tension between them. But it's not enacted on because she won't, because I'm a zombie and I don't want to hurt you. Mm-hmm. I think there needs to be he won't as well. And not just because he's confused, like he was earlier in the season. Why are you coming on to me now? When you've been pushing me away. I think he does need to go. I think it would be really awesome if he became the antagonist, anti-hero, vigilante on the outside. I think it would be an interesting way for the show to go.
Yeah, and it would be a huge step forward for Robert Buckley. Of course, as long as we still get the shirtless Major fix.
Well, of course. Vigilantes are shirtless most of the time, aren't they?
Well, Arrow Season 1 certainly proved that, and it set a bar really high. So, yeah. Yeah, CW knows how to do its naked vigilantes.
I have to say, too, Robert Buckley is surprising the heck out of me. Because I have to admit, I really underestimated him. It means, okay, he's going to be a fun character and incredibly welcome eye candy. But it's like the eye candy part now is just
incidental.
The cherry on, it's the cherry on top of this awesome sundae that is everything he's presenting, because the way he's acting this, the material he's being given and the way he's acting it makes me so believe everything about it and makes me so glad that Major is a character in the story, which in the beginning, I'm like, eye candy, just take your shirt off every episode. I'm fine with that. Now I'm like, no, where's Major? I want him in the story. This is awesome. He's such a great component to it now. Yay, Robert. I love you.
What I'm about to say will sound insulting, but it's actually a huge compliment. So with this disclaimer out, when I saw Robert Buckley on One Tree Hill, after One Tree Hill, I did not think he was an actor talented enough to pull off this storyline.
Yeah, I agree.
It just, you know, after a certain amount of episodes on One Tree Hill, I was pretty sure that he's just a pretty boy that got cast on a CW show because he looks the part. But at no point in time before iZombie have I thought that he's a good actor. I'm terribly sorry about it. And I'm willing to eat my hat right now because over the course of 11 episodes, he proved how extremely talented he is and how much he can do if he gets the right material. Because amazing, awesome doesn't even cover it. He can go, you know, as subtle as he wants to. He can go as extreme as he wants to. And I cannot believe that I'm watching the same guy who did One Tree Hill all those years ago that I laughed at. Because he was terrible. But here, it's like a second coming, honestly.
Years ago, my friend Doreen, she's done some Chicks podcast with us. She and I used to go see this band, and it was Paul Nugent and Morgan Ferguson. And this music reviewer wrote this review about that band that they had moved into. And she said, Paul Nugent just oozed sex appeal. Like, he was the end-all be-all. She was just like, he's the rock god kind of thing here. And Doreen and I read this article and we went, yes, he is. Paul was just beautiful. He was everything that, you know, you look at this rock star kind of thing to be.
Mm-hmm.
But we said, you need to move a few feet behind and a few feet to the left to see the secret of the ooze, which was Morgan Ferguson, because you didn't realize it. But here was this incredibly good-looking guy who was incredibly funny, incredibly talented and all this, and just secretly oozed sex appeal and charisma and everything. All, you just were totally blindsided by him. That's what I feel like Robert Buckley is like. Here we had this shiny rock star with Bradley James, and I'm not putting Bradley down at all. I love Lowell's character.
No. He Bradley's
was
awesome.
Great. No, he was everything that you expect that leading man, romantic interest, everything to be. This episode just confirms it even more for me. It's like, okay, move a few steps back and a few steps to the left for Robert Buckley, who is like the secret of the ooze, because I am totally sold by his performance and the eye candy and his performance, his talent and delivery and the eye candy.
Even though, you know, we have the hashtag Ravi Rocks, which he does, I'm pretty sure we should have a new hashtag and we should use it every day because major amazing. I don't know what the hashtag should be, but yeah, major crush.
He's the secret of the ooze.
Yeah.
And that's a high compliment because I was a Morgan gal. So Alex, on the Sci-Fi for Chicks Eye Zombie hotness scale, the Scoville scale with peppers, to see how hot this episode is. Where would you rate this episode, Astro Burger?
I decided to... last week I gave the episode a 7 because I couldn't connect with it for reasons, and, you know, reasons. But this week was an improvement. I'm still, you know, grieving after certain events that didn't happen. And fanfic will prove me so. But it was better, and I liked it. So I decided to go one up and give it an 8. TH always gives me trouble with pronunciation. But yeah, an 8.
I'll tell you, and you know this, that there's many times we come to the episode and I'm like, oh, crikey, what's my scale? I've got to figure out what I rate this episode. And sometimes I'm good and actually do it right after the episode or right before we podcast. This is one I started thinking about while I was watching the show.
Ooh.
And I was actually very disappointed in several aspects of this. Mainly the brain. She wasn't on the brain. The crime wasn't a big thing. A lot of stuff. I was like, maybe a 7. Maybe I'll give it a 7. Then he took his shirt off. So kind of like Perry and Inaba on Dancing with the Stars takes a point off when they do a lift. I'm like, well, that's worth a point. Just for that. alone. And then we had that whole scene when he grabs her face and kisses her, and he's so, I'm just like, you know, getting a little hot and bothered there. I'm like, okay, well, that's nice. I mean, it's not really story stuff, but that's nice. I like that. And then you had the double twist at the end where the entire episode was basically a delusion. And the entire episode turned around. She was on the brain the whole time. Everything. I'm going over. You went 8? Yeah. Sorry. I'm going what I had last week. This is. No, actually, I think I'm moving up. I'm moving up from last week. I'm going weary. This was a 10. During the episode, maybe a 7. But that end reveal changed the entire episode for
nice.
Me. Entire episode. And like I said, the fact that it wasn't for me telegraphed was what sold it. If I had had an inkling that she was on the brain, that all those little things there where she kept dealing with that cheesy puff devil.
Yeah.
That was just enough to make me think that's all it was.
Yeah.
That's all the brain was affecting her. Because there was just enough. And so the way it revealed at the end, that bumped it straight up to a 10 for
me.
And if the next two episodes at least hang in this area, I will be very happy with this season overall. But yeah, considering a couple episodes ago, I marked it all the way down to a 7, even though I love the episode. This one threw me off my game because we ended up exactly where I said we should be with him still being on the out and not knowing, but they made me totally think I was wrong the entire episode. So for that, you get an even extra. We'd really like to know what you think of this episode. Where would you rate it? Are you going to be down a little bit more by Alex? Are you going to be up a little bit more like me? Are you going to be somewhere totally opposite on the scale? You can let us know on Twitter at @SciFiForChicks. You can email us scififorchicks@scififorme.com or call us on the hotline 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-5. We have actually, I think Alex is still mourning the loss of Lowell and has actually gone dark. So I will sign off for the both of us. We will see you next week when we talk episode 12, the penultimate episode of this first season. Dead rat, live rat, brown rat, white rat. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll say thank you from Alex as well. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Okay. Ready to pop this in? Oh, remember, guys, it's Robbie's first time.
Vertigo Virgin here. Mm-hmm. Be gentle with me.
Maybe not tonight, Peyton.
An unhinged man is sucked into a whirlpool of terror and tension. Perhaps another day.
Let's watch something that's new for all of us.
So, I'm gonna guess that no one's gonna let me watch Harvey either. Some real Jimmy Stewart haters here.
Has anybody been watching Zombie High? I hear season 2 is amazing. What? You used to love that show.
She's worried about me. I knew this guy at the mental hospital who kept trying to convince me that zombies were roaming Seattle. But I'm okay. You want to feel better about your mental health? Spend a couple days with some clinically insane people.
Do it every Thanksgiving.
I mean, it's not like I believe the guy. Zombies? Come on.
What a load of crap. That dude totally believes in zombies. And he's gonna find that video if you don't get to it first.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.